Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I think a lot of the past few years has been so much of me like losing my compass, you know? And it's like, as an artist, like your instinct is like your strongest tool. It's not research, it's not, you know, technical skill. It's that magic of like, you have to know what it is that you are trying to look for in your practice. And so when I hear this, I'm like, okay, what was I trying to express back then? And does it still hold true?
I'm so happy to share a conversation with artist mother Amy Wong today. Amy is a self-proclaimed angry Asian feminist disguised as an oil painter. Her practice ranges from painting-based installation to collaborative projects that explore the politics of making noise and conditioning spaces that allow for thinking through together. She is the founder of the Angry Asian Feminist Gang, AAFG, a collective of diaspora cultural producers dedicated to dialogue centered on Asian feminist concerns. Often inverting private and public spaces, Amy asserts ways in which a leakiness and messiness of things can aspire towards feminist and decolonial ways of being. Amy's practice oscillates between different systems of representation to evoke nonlinear personal narratives. She often works with what she considers a bad idea or a cliche in order to redefine them on her own terms. I can't wait to talk about all of this and hear more about her life and practice. Amy, welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me.
Of course, I'm so happy to talk with you and hear more about your work. Let's dive right in and have you share something about your childhood that you feel like connects to your life as an artist today.
I've been thinking about that question and I'm just trying to find an access point. There are just so many, you know, I think about artist practice and making as a way of thinking through things. And I think now being a mother, my son is, his name's Rudy. He's five. You know, and seeing the way that he is moving through the world from like things and catching things and ripping them up and drawing on them and, you know, crafting and finding garbage and, you know, just putting things together and seeing what happens is a large part of what I did as a kid. I always loved drawing. I always loved crafts. I remember as a kid, like I watched a lot of TV, you know, I grew up in the 80s. And like the two shows that I loved were, there was one called Mr. Dress Up. You know, he would have segments where like he would draw something and then he would put on a costume and, you know, there would be a craft segment. Like any kid show that had some kind of craft instruction, I would just pour over that. So I think Art Attack was another one, you know, and Bob Ross, I think, is the reason that I paint. So it's like combination of like watching people on TV and then being like, oh, I can do that. Like, I'm going to go grab some toilet paper and like cut it up. So I think about that a lot. And specifically with drawing, when I was a kid, my dad would play this game with me where like he would start with a circle and then he'd ask me what it was and I'd make a guess and then he'd add something to it so that it was no longer what I thought it was. And then I would take a turn. Like, I always remember it was like a circle was like a bowling ball or an orange. And then it changed into a bicycle.
Like a like a drawn conversation.
And you know, it's like, I really feel like that is something anchored like very subconsciously with my practice because it's really about the process or the unfolding and not this idea of like drawing as like a point of completion or you know, like making a product, you know?
I love that. What a great point of reflection. And it reminds me of this activity. And in 2019, we did an in-person Artist Mother retreat, and an artist mother there led a Julianne Strom Brill. She led an activity where we kind of did the same thing, where you partnered up. I can't remember exactly how we did it, but we partnered up and basically had a drawing conversation. Like somebody would start a drawing and then somebody else would respond. And it wasn't quite the, you know, the bowling ball turning into something else, but just that idea of mark making as dialogue between two people is just really interesting. And I love that you and your dad kind of shared in that practice a little bit.
I mean, it's like, I love all of those kinds of games that are really about, I guess, collaboration. Like, you know, I don't know if you've ever done like group drawing, you know, even if it's like a giant stoner doodle or whatever. It's like bringing people together and like, or playing Exquisite Corpse. Or there was a game I remember I learned when I was in Amsterdam where it was kind of like a broken telephone. So you write a sentence and then you pass it to the next person and they have to quickly draw the sentence. And because it's so
illustrations, that's like a board game now.
Is it called illustrations?
Telestrations. I play this with my cousins at Thanksgiving and like family gatherings. Yeah. And we play the After Dark version and it is hilarious.
Is there like a prompt for it?
Yeah. So everybody gets a notebook and they do like a dry erase. Or like, you know, it's like this game. So it comes with this little kit and everybody has a dry erase little notebook that you can flip through. And you start with a prompt and you try to write. It's like Pictionary and telephone like dirty prompts. It's so funny.
That's exactly what I did.
So funny. It is like I have tears streaming down my face playing that. I have a bunch of adult cousins. We're all like within the same age range. Oh my gosh. There's nothing.
A family like entertainment.
Yes. Oh, so funny.
Kind of like stage it at different, like if you give it to a bunch of kids, you can play like a clean version, but you know, it's like,
definitely.
I feel like that it's all about the kind of miscommunication and the ambiguity that
I mean, even just like Pictionary, you know, like, isn't there a Friends episode where they play Pictionary and they're like trying to draw something? And just that moment of like, you're trying to communicate something through a drawn symbol or a visual cue without language. And, you know, just that, like, what people see versus what you're trying to communicate versus what they hear. I don't know. It's just, it creates a lot of humor.
Totally. And it's like, it's just so interesting because it really is about the perspectives of like two people coming together and like everything that you bring to the table. So like everything that you've learned culturally or historically or in terms of symbology or whatever, like how you interpret signs. So it's like something so simple actually kind of unpacks a lot.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think these, you know, like I love, you know, when you think about art a lot of times, or now that I teach, like school assignments are not that dissimilar to that game, right?
Yeah.
It's like giving students a prompt and then seeing like, where are you going to take this? And then how does that become something more and how does your audience interpret it? So I feel like games are a very good segue to art practice.
Absolutely. Speaking of, let's talk a little bit about the art that you actually make. So I want to hear you describe kind of what your art looks like and what some of the mediums and processes are that you use for those listening who maybe have not seen your work before.
Sure. So, I mean, it's a great question. It's like when you read my bio, it's like I feel like I've had so much distance from my practice. You know, we have talked a little bit about the way that, you know, before starting this interview, it's like my practice is in like a moment of reflection, or it's in a slower state. And, you know, everyone's had a hard time with the pandemic. Everyone has circumstances that they're navigating through. And so, you know, part of me was like, I had to look up my website to prepare for this question. And yeah, sometimes I forget what it is that I do, but you know, I started with painting.
Can I just say, like, thank you for saying that, because I know there's so many people listening who are like feeling very seen and validated right now. To have somebody vocalize that I'm in a slow season in my practice and I have to check back in, and you know, it doesn't just come out guns blazing every day. Like, it just doesn't, or every month or every year, you know,
it's like, a total myth.
Let's just, take a moment to, you know, validate that experience. 'Cause it's not what patriarchy wants us to do. Right.
Well, that's it. And I mean, thank you for saying that. 'Cause you know, I am nervous talking about it, but I think it's really important to be real about that. And I guess my practice, really at the core of it, I use different materials and processes, but I really am interested in like kind of finding the truth to things and like dispelling or finding like a real talk moment through praxis of art, whether it's a conversation or an exhibition or performance or what have you. It doesn't really matter what the medium is, but there are so many myths to the practice of art that when you come into it, you know, as a femme or as a woman or as a person of color or as someone not from money, or, you know, when you're just a regular person coming into this world of art, there are so many things that are sold to you that are just actually not true. And as you said, you know, it's the patriarchy, it's also capitalism that like demands us to produce. And I say this now like it's like not an easy thing that I came to, because I realized that up till the pandemic, it's like I was just going, saying yes to everything, like teaching too much, working on this, like, you know, taking a break from caring for my son by going to work, or like going to the studio and then taking a break from art by taking care of my kid or my parents. And it's like, it's not okay. Like, you're gonna burn out. And so we all know that the pandemic exacerbates already complicated or difficult situations for those who are already going through something. And so, yeah, I think it really took, well, a lot of therapy and a good art community and friends, you know, that it kind of really helped me realize like how important art is, because yeah, I think this is a very big, I'm like totally jumping on a lot of trajectories, but to answer.
No, it all makes total sense. And bring it back to describing your work for me. So
I know, I'm like, I have to come back to this a little bit. Maybe I'm avoiding the question. It's like, I feel like I started art as like a punk rock feminist, like trying to make video art and like collages, and then came around to oil painting as this thing that I really wanted to do. And again, it's like, you're not supposed to want to make oil paintings if you're like this radical, like politicized person. It's like the epitome of privilege, right? So why would you want to make paintings? And I just found these juxtapositions so interesting. So I started making paintings. I do painting-based installation. They're figurative. They're also abstract. It's a very mixed bag. It's kind of finding found imagery and like smushing it together with personal images and textures. And as I continue to paint, I also have a social practice. So again, all of these things are on hiatus, but like I'm really interested in finding ways to support community or find ways to make work for communities that I am part of. And mm-hmm. so, like, yeah, being part of collectives is like a really important thing, like collaboration work. Mm-hmm. And then since I've had my son, like, doing work with him and alongside him, and then also like hosting like events and making spaces to talk about art and motherhood and resource sharing. And, you know, a lot of different things all rolled into one, but everything that I do is grounded in the praxis of painting and drawing, again, like as process, as dialogue.
Yeah, actually, I was introduced to your work by the show that you were a part of at Dream Song Gallery, The Glitter of Seas. I was just looking it up. And it was the collaborative work that, you know, just really interested me. Well, partially because it signified to me that you were an artist mother. And, you know, I kind of went, that whole show was such a beautiful show. I went through the whole roster and like looked everybody up and, you know, I think I reached out to maybe one other person from that show, but you were someone that I was like, oh, I want to like hear more about Amy's work and practice kind of after I went and looked at your website after that show. So, do you want to talk more, a little bit more about that work that was in that show, and we can make sure we feature some images of it?
Sure. Well, it's such an honor that you went to see the show and, you know, had a feeling.
Virtually, but yeah.
I also was not able to go in person. And I would love to visit the space someday. The show, that exhibition is a group show that featured artists kind of unpacking like maternity, you mm-hmm. know, and all the kind of difficulties that come with it. Before we started recording, we kind of talked briefly about that experience of art and motherhood. And so, mm-hmm. you know, how that kind of comes together, and these watercolors that I made, it's a selection of work that like I just started making them with my son, I think from the first year that he was born. So the earliest one was in 2017. And the most recent one was this past year, up till he was four. And the work, they're called breast milk watercolors. So I, you know, when he started to learn how to draw, which was quite early on, like make scribbles with crayons and things, I had a lot of water-soluble pastels and water-soluble watercolor pencil crayons. So he would make these scribbles and I would be drawing with him. And then afterwards, I just like, you know, your boobs get really full if you don't nurse for a few hours at mm-hmm. that time. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to turn these into watercolors. And I just took my tit out. I'm like, squeezed some breast milk on, you know, and it was like very abject and like kind of pretty, you know, they're mm-hmm. very pastel-y, you know, like he would smush them around. And I'd push around this breast, like there's just something so gross, but so like animal, but mm-hmm. also so dainty, you know, this whole idea of like women in watercolors.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
To me, it was just a way to kind of take the piss out of it. But like, but very literally there, you know, when you have a kid, there's not that boundary of like studio practice that, you know, I was so privileged to have had before, where you have this huge space and you're alone and you have your thoughts and you're uninterrupted, you know, this myth of the genius, you like, you're really craft, you know, making crafts with your kid, or you have 5 minutes to scribble like a thought in a book, and then you're back to doing something to keeping this person alive. And so, yeah, that's what that series was about.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about how your art career has sort of been intersected, or, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth and say derailed, but, you know, by motherhood, just your kid is five now. And so, you know, 2 to 3 years of your kid's life has been pandemic. So I'm just curious a little bit about your kind of art career before having your son, and then a little bit about, I mean, you've talked about sort of the slower season recently due to the pandemic, but maybe you could talk about the intersection of art and motherhood for you.
Yeah. I mean, I can also say that I was separated from my ex-partner in 2019. So okay. Like, it's a very kind of, it was just before the pandemic, if you really think about it. And so mm-hmm. I feel like I can think of my work in terms of like life before a kid, and then the first couple of years of like making work with a very young child, mm-hmm. And having that kind of schedule where you're really like stuck to them mm-hmm. all the time, to like separating. And then like now that my kid is a bit older and mm-hmm. like we can talk and like work out studio process mm-hmm. together. And like, you know, I can see that in different stages. And so for me, obviously, like before I had a kid in 2017, I had more access to time, resources, and like a very different schedule, right? Mm-hmm. So I was going to openings all the time. I was seeing tons of exhibitions. I was traveling a lot. I did a lot of residencies throughout my like earlier days. And so like that ability to like really absorb and meet artists and learn from them and be inspired by them. Mm-hmm. Everything was really caught on paper and writing, like on paint, you know, it was very material. Mm-hmm. And then when I had Rudy in 2017, things switched to being, I had just finished grad school. So I went back to school and finished in 2015, I guess, the end of 2015. And then I got pregnant. And then I had him. And so, you know, the idea was to continue working with a studio-based practice. But then when you realize that you're pregnant, you can't really do the things, you know, I had a quite mm-hmm. unhealthy practice with a lot of toxins,
right?
Like, terps and things. And like, I've now cut that out of my practice. But even teaching at an art school, you know, and having to ask for accommodations, like I can't teach around, you know, people using hazardous materials. So I think it just kind of naturally evolved into more like process or event or performative conversational projects, you know, mm-hmm. like I did a lot of events, a lot mm-hmm. of meetings with people, hosting events where people could come together and talk. And so, yeah, like I think a lot of it just got really heady and also very interpersonal. You know, Rudy was always there. He was at a lot of meetings. You know, he was at all the kind of talks and performances. And then we just eventually, like it started with those watercolors, but we started to collaborate more. So the past couple of years, especially during the pandemic, I left my studio and, you know, just started doing things like video work where, you know, I collaborated with another artist, Lee Doty, and like use snippets with what I was learning from him and like our mm-hmm. time together. And, you know, again, like the things that like feel kind of icky to do, you know, like mm-hmm. you're not supposed to make work with your kid because you're scared that it's cute or
yep.
not going to be taken seriously. And so again, like going towards that. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I have now relocated into a home studio that it's, you know, it's getting there. It's getting ready to be worked in again.
And you're in Toronto, right?
I'm in Toronto. So I moved out just outside, you know, to a suburb called Scarborough,
okay.
Ontario, with my parents. And I've been here since I separated. And, you know, there's not a lot of space in the city. And there's a lot of issues with artists not being able to keep their spaces. And, you know, with the pandemic and with rent being really unaffordable, I feel grateful to, for the first time, to be out here in the suburbs with my folks.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been amazing. And so like, I feel very lucky to have this space. Like I have a whole basement that I've kind of divided half to be, or the front part to be like Rudy's playroom and like a chill out space. Mm-hmm. And then kind of trying to find a way to make the back a studio space. So I want to get back into like continuing the collaborative practice, but really like starting that boundary of like, okay, I'm going to make paintings again. Mm-hmm. Like there's something about like, you know, not even the installational work that I've done, which is like made up of a lot of kind of bits and pieces, mm-hmm. but like really just like focus on a rectangle and like right. figure out how to resolve it.
It's a nice way in, at least, you know, it's a starting point, right?
Artist mothers know there's nothing more important than taking care of yourself, because if you're not feeling your best, you can't be your best. Sambucol helps you feel your best with powerful immune support, powered by nature's superfruit, black elderberry. I'm personally so grateful for Sambucol and their immune system supporting products. I think about my health a lot and feel like the best action I can take besides getting good sleep is nourishing my body by consuming healthy things that support my immune system. Sambucol elderberry gummies taste great, and I love that they are low in sugar and contain no gelatin since my family is vegetarian. It's so easy to get my kiddos to eat one of these gummies every day, and it helps me feel good knowing my kids have the support from products like this, especially in a season of life where reinforcing our bodies with healthy things is just on our minds a lot. Sambucol is a trusted brand. It's the original black elderberry and was developed by a virologist, so I know I'm getting a great quality product. Get 15% off your next order of $9.99 or more at sambucolusa.com. Use code ARTIST15 for 15% off. Just as a note, these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Thank you, Sambucol, for supporting the Artist Mother podcast. We so appreciate you and the products you're putting into the world. Again, Artist Mothers get 15% off your next order of $9.99 or more at sambucolusa.com and use code ARTIST15 for 15% off.
Amy, there's a line in your bio that I read that I would love for you to just kind of flesh out for me. It says, Amy asserts ways in which a leakiness and messiness of things can aspire towards feminist and decolonial ways of being. And then it goes on to say, your practice oscillates between different systems of representation to evoke non-linear and personal narrative. She often works with what she considers a bad idea or a cliche in order to redefine them on her own terms. Could you talk to me a little bit about that language and what that means to you? Yeah. I know this might be, as you mentioned, like kind of words that you were working with a few years ago before this slower season in the pandemic and stuff. But I can't help but think that line specifically about the leakiness and messiness, offering more space for, you know, for you as an artist and a mother to exist in the art world, like all of that kind of makes sense to me and speaks to what we were talking about before, but I would love to hear you talk more specifically about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little embarrassing, like hearing your own art. And I'll be candid about another thing. Like my website is like pretty horrible. Like it's very out of date. Like, and that's one of the things about becoming a mother, right? Like mm-hmm. I think really the last time I paid any attention to it was in 2016 when I was pregnant. So, mm-hmm. Like part of those, it's a little embarrassing reading this text from quite a few years ago. But yeah, you know, it's like,
it's so good okay, though.
It still holds true. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Like, don't lose yourself here. And like, I think a lot of the past few years has been so much of me like losing my compass, you know? And it's like, as an artist, like your instinct is like your strongest tool. It's not mm-hmm. research. Not, you know, technical skill. It's that magic of like, you have to know what it is that you are trying to look for in your practice. And so when I hear this, I'm like, okay, what was I trying to express back then? Mm-hmm. And does it still hold true? I think for me, I mean, I don't really love using the word feminist, in all honesty, even though I use it all the time. I wonder often when I first understood that term, you know, before I knew it was a word, you know, when in childhood do you, as someone, you know, I was always called a tomboy, or, you know, when you're not allowed to do this, or when you can't play with Barbies because you're a boy, or like, you know, you have to paint your nails because this, or, you know, all the gendered things, but then also all the like racial things. Because when you're a kid, like, kids do see race and they understand that. It's like in the way that your family interacts with the world. It's the way that your community does. And like all of these things, I'm like, I think that just like being someone who was observant or had a lot of questions and didn't always know how to find those answers, you know, like, I'm the first in my family to go to school. So it's like my parents didn't always have the language to like give me to like answer these questions. And I think that, you know, this idea of leakiness is like, you, it doesn't mean that you go and you get an MFA and you know everything. I really don't believe in that. I think culture exists everywhere. I don't think that you go to a museum and you become cultured and then you know everything about art. You know, it's like this wisdom comes from your grandmother. It comes from your kids. It comes from watching someone cook something. It comes from...
from the street.
Yeah, like, I mean...
from the playground.
It's like such a hard thing to think about, like, what's your favorite artist? Or like, what are you inspired by? I think about music a lot too, and the power of something like sound. It's leaky, right? Like you can't contain it.
Right.
And I try to think about that as analogy for identity or for some sort of purpose, right? Like if you understand that there are communities in this world, and as a child, as you get older and you start to see the bullshit, you know, when you're a teenager and you're like, oh, this isn't right. Or you start to learn about history a bit, you can see that there is like a deliberate flattening of identities, and not just my own, but like of many marginalized communities, right? So when you understand that as like a deliberate flattening or removal of certain types of information so that you don't really know the whole truth about something. And, you know, we've seen, especially in this very charged political time, like we're starting to talk about this more. Like, I just think that I gravitate towards the opposite, like patching things together. And it's like very like female labor stuff, right? Like just finding all the sources that work for me, storytelling, you know, the kind of networks that aren't, you know, given awards or like certificates or, you know, just these other places that I think allow for a richer understanding of like what it means to be in the world around you. And I think I really understood that by leaving Toronto, you know, like I never got to travel when I was a kid. I never got to go anywhere. And I had so many questions and I was always so angry about everything.
Were you born and raised in Toronto?
Yeah, I was born and raised first in the East End of Toronto, like off the Danforth, Greek town.
Okay.
And then my folks and I, we moved to Scarborough when I was a teenager. We went bankrupt and moved out to the suburbs. And so like, you know, I always felt like, oh, I don't know where my artist community is. I don't know what it means, but like, I need to see more. And so it wasn't until I left and started traveling and using art as an opportunity to get that, was that like, I feel like it's like this patching of different experiences, and like you see how different cultures and different societies and different cities, different places, you know, kind of have different ways of looking at things. It goes back to this idea of the drawing game that we were talking about, right? Like, so like a circle to you means one thing, but someone living on the other side of the world will have a completely different way of understanding it. So yeah, I think just learning more again through community and peers, like, you know, the more that you can kind of piece together this like huge quilt, sort of understanding things, like, I think the more grateful I become in having like these access points, I guess, and like trying to find ways of like honoring that, I guess.
I'm so glad I asked you to talk about that. I know you were like, but that was amazing. Part of what you were saying too, and what was coming up for me and like the leakiness and messiness is just, you know, this concept of something that I learned through a great anti-racism training that we did in the Artist Mother community, but just how perfectionism is a myth sold to women by the patriarchy, that, you know, and that women expect other women to be perfect. And so if we can instead like create community and create spaces and create conversations where we give each other more grace, right? And we not only expect, but welcome the leakiness and the messiness, and, you know, that we understand that like nobody is perfect, and that actually that is our attempts at perfectionism only, you know, are a myth sold to us by patriarchy. And yeah, it's just, you know, some like that eternal conditioning that we're just always working on.
What is this idea of being perfect too? You know, it's a, like, it's this expectation that like, it's so well upheld because it, that, that peer judgment or that horizontal judgment, like really puts it into effect, you know? And I think that I've definitely internalized that, you know, like, especially when you don't like know exactly what it means to be an artist, you know, you're kind of figuring it out as you go along. So you kind of compare yourself to artists that you look up to or your peers, and it's like, well, what am I supposed to be doing? And it can be so harmful because, yeah, everyone does come from different, you know, circumstances. And also, I think the idea of like the young art star is really damaging, especially to people who have kids, right? Because you don't always have, it's like what, like a ticking time bomb that you have to do what by a particular time. And that's like that, I think that really mirrors that idea of like, you know, women or femmes being valued for being like youthful and beautiful and the currency of that. And then, you know, once you reach middle age, then you're kind of invisible again and like, so weird. And like, you know that these are mechanisms that are in place, but like, it takes a lot to undo them in yourself. I feel that for me very much. And so I guess in that statement, you know, when I was younger, I always thought like, I'm anti-racist, I'm doing decolonial work, I'm a feminist, this and that. And like, I realized like how many mistakes I've made, and like, I don't like that finger pointing, but I do it all the time. And it's like, we're all just learning here. So again, it, I think it does go back to your point of perfection, right? Like the call out culture of activism can be really, really scary. And
yeah,
you know, we're just doing the rest. And like, I think of all, you know, the Indigenous artists that I'm like, who have been patient with me, you know, it's like, there's so many holes in my own learning that I'm just grateful to be able to use art as a lens for like kind of uncovering your own blind spots. So yeah, I don't know, as much as I'd like to think that I'm doing all these things, I really think they are just, it's a process of aspiring towards that, and like hopefully liberation for everyone, right? Like that's the real goal, is that it cannot just be for you and your community. And like, to be an ally is like, you have to put your money where your mouth is. Like,
I don't think artists
always do that.
And and that's the activist culture that, you know, I hope that we're inspiring in the Artist Mother community, and that those are the leaders that I want to follow, are the people who are not like who are allowing margin for mistakes to be made, right? Because, and that's not to, you know, what's that saying about intentions and impact, right? Like, you know, there is still this, there's so much repercussion and response and action that needs to be had, but also like these are human beings who are, you know, trying to work through this stuff. And it's just so much.
Oh gosh, I'm gonna take a breath here. And I think something that I have been pretty hard on myself about, and it is pretty hard to be on this pause because I am usually somebody who's very vocal, and you know, I'm realizing too that like we all have a capacity and like we all have limited resources. You know, it's not this, again, it's like about perfection or like always doing or always doing the thing that you need to do. And like the past couple of years, like I've really had to like watch out for my mental health. I've done a lot of therapy, as I said, you know, I've really slowed down and this is not something that I'm used to or familiar with. And especially in these past couple of years where there has been so much, I guess like crisis politically, you know, culturally, everything, you know, like feeling like I'm not contributing in the way that I would like to. And like reminding myself that like you have to also treat yourself with that kindness as well. You know, like I think it was your conversation with Sandeep where you guys talked about something like, you know, with mothering, that symptom of like mothering everyone else, you know, like providing that, like making sure everyone else is okay, making sure your community is okay, but like you have to make sure, like, you know, the whole putting the mask on yourself, put it on someone else. For me, like self-care is a very difficult thing to try to understand. And so, yeah, just slowing down and pausing and being like, you know what, you don't need to produce anything. This is what you always say to your students. This is always what you say out loud, but to really like accept that, I think is a very important lesson. And it goes to like activist work, everything, you know, it's like, if you can't do it right now, it's okay. And like, forgive yourself, like you're in, the intention is there. So the actions will come in the ways that you can. And I think with the past couple of years too, it's like, you want to do everything, right? You want to help everybody. And
there's so much need.
There's so much need. And so, yeah, I just try to, I am not kind with myself about it, but I'm trying to be, you know, like, I don't want to be a phony or like, I don't want to just say these things. But yeah, I try to remind myself like in day-to-day action, like what are the things that I am doing? Because as you said, impact does matter. Like words are one thing and talking about things is one thing, but really like what actions are being done. And yeah,
could you talk to me just a little bit about some of the ways that you are trying to be gentler to yourself? Just a couple examples from my own life. My word for the year is space, and so I'm really just trying to you know, my personality is sounds like similar to yours in that just every spare inch in the container, right? I'm always filling it to the top and really trying this year to leave some space for spontaneity, for being in the present moment, for joy, for volunteering, for whatever like inspires me, but not having an agenda for 25% of my life. And then another thing I'm really trying to do this year is to be slower with my decision making, because I'm often very quick to action, quick to, you know, respond, and it just, you know, I end up getting myself in situations where I'm burnt out or I'm not fully processing like what commitments I already have on my plate before I say yes to something else. So just interested to hear maybe some examples for you of what are some ways you're trying to be a little bit gentler to yourself in this season?
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate what you just said. I think that's like, I can really relate to that. Like when you say it, I'm like, okay, space. Space. Yes. We need to do that for ourselves. Just talking to you, I apologize if I like jump in. Like, I think I have ADHD or like I am very scattered in my thinking. Like, I get excited about stuff and I have to like tell you my thought or else I will forget it. So I apologize if I cut you off, and I'm really working on that, like just slowing my mind down too, like as you said. And I've been trying since the pandemic, I've been basically off social media. Mm. And that actually feels really good. Mm-hmm. It can feel a bit isolating too, because that's often how I keep in touch with my community. Like a lot of my friends and artist friends are not in Toronto. So mm-hmm. I do feel like I'm missing a lot, or like, especially with like political dialogue, I'm not always like, oh, I don't know what people are talking about. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just the clearing of things in the mind, I think I really needed that. Mm. Also because I care so much about things and the stress of that, like if you're just absorbing kind of crisis after crisis mm-hmm. every day and then feeling helpless about it, it can be really hard. So I try to limit that, or like even like schedule that time of like, mm-hmm. okay, I will like read the news for like this much time today. Mm-hmm. I'm like not just scroll through and like keep doing, like setting limits, I guess. Mm-hmm. With artwork, I mean, I feel like the idea of seeing an exhibition in person is like such a far memory. Mm-hmm. I would love to see an exhibition someday, but kindness to myself in that respect is like giving myself the time to like read an article. Mm. Or, you know, I haven't been great on like seeing exhibits online, but like hearing a talk, you know, mm-hmm. just making time for these things, which I have also at some periods of time like not been able to do. Like, you know, as you said, the cup is like over full, so how mm-hmm. you make that time. I think just like even very simple self-care routines, you know, like, and I mean simple, like since the pandemic, like I do not shower every day. I don't think I shower. I stopped showering daily since Rudy was born. I was like, what's a daily shower?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever showered every day. Well, I guess when I was playing soccer every day in college, but that's pretty much the only time. If I sweat, I'll shower. If I didn't sweat, I'm probably not showering.
For me, it was swimming. Like after swimming, you got to shower. It's like, now that's just gross. Come mm-hmm. on. little things like even remembering to like make a cup of tea before I like got on the meeting for you. Like I didn't do those things before, as you said, water. Mm-hmm. You know, holding up your water bottle.
Yep.
Little things like that. Taking a bath once in a while. Yeah. Watching stupid things on Netflix is new for me. Like I had no time to watch Netflix. And also with kids, like
the joy of Netflix. Amy, come on.
It's new. It's new and I'm loving it. That and just listening to music. Because like with kids, like watching something that isn't animated mm-hmm. or hearing something that's like not a repetitive kid song
yep.
is a form of self-care, I would say.
Yep, definitely. The only kids' music we listen to is Raffi. Do you guys listen to Raffi? Have you listened to that new podcast about Raffi? It's so good.
I'm not aware of it.
He's from Toronto. You must be a Raffy fan.
He's like a legend. Favorite.
Okay, so I grew up listening to Raffy. He was like my favorite, you know, like the best music ever, kids music. And so like when I had kids, I was so happy to introduce my kids. It's like the only kids music I'll listen to. I love it, blah, blah, blah. Well, just like last week, I came across this podcast called Finding Raffy. And it's all about his life. Like I don't know if you heard of Dolly Parton's America, where it was like a 10 episode series, like a mini series kind of about like Dolly Parton's life. Well, this has a similar vibe where it's about Raffy and this guy's like investigating, you know, Raffy's life and how he like kind of his philosophy. Like it's so positive and like so beautiful. You have to listen to it. The episodes are like 30 minutes. It's so good. It just is like, we need more people like Raffy in the world. And he's still alive. So, you know, he's on the podcast. Like he talks about some of the memories.
Write Raffy a letter. Mm-hmm. My friend's kid did that. I don't know what happened or came out of it or whether he wrote back, but it doesn't matter, you know. You just want to let him know like what he's done. I think I will definitely check that out.
It's so good.
Rudy was so into Raffy, and then he's kind of like drifted off into his own. He has his own thing for music. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for a while it was just like I would keep putting Raffy on, like, don't do the banana phone again. And he's like, don't. But there was like an what's it called on Spotify, there is like I think, I don't know if it's live, but it's something like Baby Beluga, mm-hmm. or like the next gen, like he says something in it where it was something like for the new generation of like,
okay,
and I don't like, I'm totally butchering this, but I was like, I think I almost cried. I was like, that is so beautiful. It's true. Like, I was listening to this song when I was a kid, and now, like, I'm just forcing Rudy to listen to it whether he wants to.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it's so good. Like, the podcast talks about, you know, his background as an immigrant and as an activist and, like, how the songs are so rooted in, like, children as like innate beings and respecting kids and like not like talking down on them, like kids are silly and stupid. And it's like, no, kids are like whole human beings that we should love and respect. It's just like every episode I've cried. It's so good.
I'll send you the song. I think that's what it was. It was like an interlude and he was saying something, like he had some spiel about, you know, like nature and being kind to Mother Earth. And like he really respects the agency of kids. And you know, in my culture too, like really, we really honor that, like kids are knowledge keepers, you know, that they're not just something to be managed, but they really like they change you and they teach you and you teach them and it's a process. And I love Raffy for that. He really respects kids. Mm-hmm. He's the only kid singer, you know.
Yep.
I don't know if you know who Blippi is, but like, god damn it, like we have to cut this out.
That's a YouTube thing, right?
Oh god, it's the worst. So
we haven't gone into the YouTube vortex yet with my kids, but I'm sure it's on the horizon. Oh, Amy, this has been so fun. Real quick before we close, I just wanted you to talk a little bit about the Angry Asian Feminist Gang, your collective. Do you want to just share briefly about that group and kind of some of your goals or how you guys have stayed connected?
I mean, we kind of haven't in many ways, and I think that's okay too. Mm-hmm. So I'll just briefly say, like in 2016, I had just finished grad school and I had thought to myself, like, you know, I was very charged, you know, that feel, you know, when you've done your dissertation, and I was like, okay, I did it. I had so many questions about the program that I was in. I was like, is this even the right thing? Like, should I even be here? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Not once, like I think back to it and it's like not once in like I don't know, the past 10 or 15 years, have I sat at a table with like diaspora Asian cultural producers of any kind? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what that feels like. Mm-hmm. And it seems like such a weird and foreign idea. And like, why doesn't that happen? Mm-hmm. And so I really wanted to initially make a reading group to like share resources, like readings or conversation or whatever, to kind of just unpack that. Mm-hmm. And I had been looking at artist collectives in New York specifically. I think it was Godzilla and Godzuki. And I was like, you know, I know. And in Toronto, there's Gendai, you know, there were these collectives and conversations. Like, it's something that keeps cycling. Like, it happens and then it disappears and then it happens. And then nobody remembers that these conversations have been had. And so I didn't really know anything about anything. I just was invited to a residency at this place called Younger Than Beyonce. And I was like, first of all, I'm not younger than Beyonce. I have an issue with that. But, you know, I will do this if you give me the space to host a meeting. And so that was just like, I just made a call out for like, is there anybody out there in this city? Like, if there's any city where like there's a lot of diaspora Asians, like Toronto is a good one for that. So like, come out. And so it turned out that there were a lot of people who had the same feelings. And so, yeah, it exists now as an online Facebook group. And then we did like in-person events and projects in Toronto. And that's what it is. Yeah, the Facebook group is not something that like I or any of the aunties who like help to organize the events and things, like we don't like moderate them. Mm-hmm. We just try to keep it respectful, but it's totally anarchic. And it's from people all over the world. And so it's a closed group for conversation. And at this point, I don't even know how I feel about Facebook. Like, I have anxiety even logging on. So it's like, these are barriers to like maintaining the spaces that I've made up. But I also think that like artist collectives are organic. Like, they are counter to institutions or these kinds of systems. Like, they're alive. So if the collective dies, it's okay.
Right.
It has spawned, you know, it has inspired other collectives to, and like, there have been other collectives in Toronto that exist alongside. So like, I don't feel like I need to necessarily keep it on as much as like to, and I'm just sort of waiting to see. I don't know, I think there is always a time and a place. So like, it can just stay online forever.
Yep.
It could get shut down. There could be in-person projects again, I don't know.
I love that.
It could just be potlucks, I don't know, you know. But
angry Asian feminist potluck gang, just add a P in there.
Well, we did some potlucks, you know. It's like, there's a lot of informal meetings, and it was really about like, instead, it's not like, you know, it's really about just making that space for people to connect. And like, I felt like of the people that I knew, I was like, why don't they know each other? So why don't we get them to connect? And like, so now that that has happened, then
The people have connected. It served its purpose.
It served its purpose. And so, in terms of like a project, I don't know. I think that I'm also really questioning, you know, I guess with Angry Asian, it was also something that I didn't want to do. And I tried to avoid for my whole art career before then to make overtly racialized work. Because that is also something that the art world does, right? Like, it wants to silo communities of color to like make the work that's expected, or to like provide institutional critique, or, you know, do that labor or be that type of artist in a way that's palatable to a mainstream or a white audience. And it's like, that's not what I want to achieve. Like, I don't really care about that. And so that also goes to that idea of like maximalism or nuance, right? Like,
yep,
that desire to express your identity as a painter, as more someone who is like diaspora and as a person of color, but like also more than, and not just because, you know, it's like a weird line that you're always kind of traversing. And so, you know, you want to be seen by your community, but you don't want to just make Asian shit, like whatever that means, even, right? Yep. What is community? All of these things are so questionable and porous. And so these are the things that I'm thinking about right now.
Thank you for sharing. Really, it's just talking so candidly about where you are and your practice is really, really refreshing. So I appreciate it, Amy. All right. I always close with five final questions just for us to get to know you a little bit better. Who is your biggest art crush?
Gosh, that one, I always feel like if I say anybody, then I'm leaving other people out. So I'm just going to say like all my artist friends, like I really, everyone that I have met, I am just so deeply inspired by their practice and who they are. So.
Favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
A dream trip? I would love to go to Thailand. And only because when I was, during the pandemic last year, I was living downtown with Rudy. And like in the dead of winter, he kept making me go for walks and pretending that we were in Thailand. Like there's just snow everywhere. And he's like, look, this is a crustacean. Like I just found a gumboot. And I'm like, I don't know what this is. So I'm like, let's go to Thailand.
Oh, I love that. You got to bring Rudy though.
Yeah. And best food ever, I think.
Yes, definitely. Well, Indian, close second after Indian food, but
it's hard. It's hard to come up with a favorite.
Yes. Tell me about a book or a film that has inspired you greatly.
Oh gosh, also hard to pick one. I will say maybe From Margin to Center by the late and great bell hooks. Anything by her, really.
Favorite meal?
Also hard to pick. My mom's cooking. Food.
What specifically does your mom cook that's your favorite?
Right now she's making, I can smell it, she's making like a braised beef with daikon and ginger. So good.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. And just want to offer you a space to give a shout out to someone who supports you in your work.
Oh my gosh. Again, like too many people. I can't pick one. It's
We'll just say Rudy.
We'll just say Rudy.
Yeah. All right, Amy. I know you're on a social media break, but where can folks find out more about you and your work if they want to look you up?
I guess my shoddy website, which I think it's amy-wong.net.
Yep.
I got it right. And then I have an Instagram, which is my full name, which is Amy Wing Han Wong. And I mean, you can try the Angry Asian Facebook. It's closed. And when I have a minute, I always try to let people. But yeah, these are some ways.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This has been so wonderful.
Thank you too. Thank you for making this space and creating this amazing community.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.